The Sprawl is crowdfunded, ad-free, and made in Calgary. If you value this podcast, please sign up as a monthly supporter of The Sprawl on Patreon. Most people do just $5 or $10 a month. You can sign up at www.patreon.com/SprawlCalgary.
The next stop, Sprawlcast.
You're listening to Sprawlcast. My name is Jeremy Clausus, and I'm the founder and editor of The Sprawl. And Sprawlcast is a radio show slash podcast made in collaboration with CJSW 90.9 FM. And we've actually been doing this for a year now. It's our 1 year birthday of Sprawlcast. We are broadcasting in Calgary on Treaty 7 land, on the traditional territories of the Blackfoot Confederacy, the Tsuut'ina Nation, Stoney Nakoda Nation, and this place is also home to Métis Nation of Alberta Region 3. Now we're going to do something a little bit different today. Usually I'm making this podcast in the studio at CJSW, but I'm in the pop-up newsroom at the new Central Library, where we've been set up since mid-January. And actually, our time here is almost done, which is kind of sad. It's been awesome. We've been able to set this place up as a space for civic engagement, and we've had Calgarians come through and post what they want to see for their city in 25 years. People have been putting their submissions on the walls. But the other thing that's been cool is school groups have been coming through. And we've been able to have conversations with students about journalism and citizenship and what does it mean to be part of this society in this day and age. And that's been really cool. We started out by just speaking about journalism and hearing what students had to say about journalism. But with the last group that came in, we took it a little bit further. We had a little more time with them and we decided to send them on assignment. Sam Hester, who's the Sprawl's comics artist, and myself kind of devised this plan that they could choose an assignment off the bulletin boards where people had posted what they want for Calgary. And we said to the students, you choose something that speaks to you, and that'll be your assignment for today. And then go out into the library and research that and bring us back a story. How might we realize that vision that's on that piece of paper in Calgary over the next 25 years? Well, this was Westmount Charter School. It was a grade 9 class, and three students decided to do radio. Students got to choose how do they want to report back, and Mason Lee, Eric Wen, and Jason Lee all chose radio. And so we're going to listen to a bit of their report here. And I'm actually going to get out of the host chair this time. I'm going to hand it over to Mason Lee, one of the students, and he is going to run the show for a little bit here.
Hello, everybody. Tis I, Mason Lee, your wonderful host, back in with another episode of the Lee Wen podcast. All right. This is episode 49, approximately. And today we're going to be talking about racism in Canada. So I think racism in Canada, it exists. It's bad. But our two guests today, Eric and Jerry, seem to have some other information they'd like to provide to us. So let's have Eric go first.
Alrighty, thank you. So we were given this project, and we chose racism to research, because racism in Canada is portrayed as something that is insignificant. Canada is portrayed as a multicultural society that welcomes everybody and like every religion, but we wanted to dive a little deeper and find out if this is actually true, and some of the results were pretty surprising. Jerry will bring you the statistics.
So as we dive into the statistics, we actually had to focus on Alberta instead of just Calgary, because there weren't a lot of sources that covered specifically Calgary. And so we see that hate crimes are on the rise in Canada. And what hate crimes are actually, it's crimes committed out of, discrimination or inflammatory feelings toward a certain characteristic of a people group. And so we see that hate crimes have risen 38% in Alberta since last year. And when you think about it, that is massive. That means if there were 10 hate crimes in your community last year, then there are now 14 this year. Honestly, it was a bit surprising to see that these levels were so high, like these statistics and these levels of racism, because honestly, when we think of Canada, we think of it as this nice place that we can leave the house without locking our door and nothing will happen, right? And oftentimes we will compare ourselves to America and say that, oh, we are just so peaceful and so perfect. But honestly, that is not the case. And so that was pretty surprising when we looked at these statistics and saw the truth.
As my esteemed guests have shown so far, racism in Canada is a major issue. But I think another important point, because journalism is racism and diversity in journalism. So has it improved? Has it gotten worse? What do you guys think?
I think with the invention of the internet in the 21st century, a lot of people, well, at least more people, are able to become journalists. They're able to publish their articles online for millions of people to see. And so that means that more people of more diverse cultures are able to get their voice heard by everybody. And although that is good, the increase of the amount of people also brings the quality of journalism down.
Eric, why has the quality gone down?
Well, you see, because there are more people, there is more competition, which incentivizes people to get more clicks on their articles, and more clicks equals more money. So a lot of the times, people will write their articles in a certain way or construct their titles in a certain way to incite emotion into their readers in order for more clicks. This is seen in a project that we did about bias in the news. So Jerry and I, we did this project on the Venezuela crisis, and we found that several news agencies implemented this tactic in order to get more clicks, and they had a lot more bias as compared to some other ones.
Eric brings up an enormously good point when he says that more points are covered. And although the quality has gone down, I think what we should consider is that we need to use this age where we have so much information thrown at us to focus more on the big picture and the long-term effects. You see, when you open your newsfeed, it is full of current events, things that are happening now. But when was the last time you saw an article that addressed issues in the long term, issues that we need to fix? And ultimately, I think in our society, we are striving to solve long-term problems in the future. Yes, Mason?
So the last time I saw an article describing long-term was yesterday, when I read an article about Brexit's effect on Britain's economy as well as the EU. So any words, good sir?
I think even when you bring up that article, you're still focusing on something that is correspondent to a current event. But what I mean is issues like racism and other things, they aren't really addressed in today's news until an event happens that brings your attention there. For example, if some mass shooting were to happen in a race-specific community, then suddenly people's attention, our community's attention, would be pulled to these areas. But you see, nobody has ever even, the world news hasn't focused on Britain's economy before Brexit. And I think that is an excellent example of how current news just overwhelms us in this day and age. And we need to focus, take a step back, and focus more on long-term issues.
All right. How do we end this?
On everyone's behalf, I would like to thank our host, our wonderful, majestic host, Mason Lee, for hosting us. And honestly, it has been a honor and a privilege to sit inside this majestic building known as the Central Library of Calgary and talk to the amazing man known as Mason Lee. And so, again, thanks, and this is Jerry Lee, Eric Wen, and Mason Lee signing off.
See ya.
Thank you.
So there you have it, the Lee Wen podcast. That was awesome. I think those guys probably have a future in radio. So in early February, we held an event here at the library and the theater, Sprawlcast Live. And we had a conversation about the future of Calgary. And a lot of that conversation was about the city's identity and how we see ourselves and how the city is changing. But at the Q&A at the end, somebody stood up and had some feedback about the conversation that had just happened. This is Donna Clark, and she's an organizer with the Renters Action Movement here in Calgary.
On my way over here tonight, I was wondering how many people might die on the streets in the cold of Calgary. I feel like I'm at a different place than reality. I feel like I'm participating in a conversation about privilege. I'm not talking about people who suffer, who are on the streets, who can't find a decent place to live with proper heat and lighting and water and services. And I'm just a little bit disappointed. I'd like to hear about people who suffer. I think that's an important part of Calgary's future, and that's how we define ourselves, by how we treat those people.
Now, I've got to admit, when Donna said that, you know, I was on stage with the panelists, and I felt a little bit put on the spot, but it's actually part of the Sprawl Manifesto that we receive feedback without defensiveness. So I had an opportunity to put that into action. And actually, what she had to say was very important and a totally good point. I actually met up with Donna afterwards and got her information and said, you know, I'd like to speak with you for a story I'm writing about income inequality for the Sprawl newspaper, but also about housing in Calgary generally. And so we're going to go upstairs now to the upper floors of the New Central Library, where I met with Donna, and I began by asking her how her group got started.
Women Together Ending Poverty, WTEP, which they're now called We're Together Ending Poverty, but they had a forum on housing in Sonalta in Calgary about 2.5 years ago. And there were a lot of people who attended, and from that, a bunch of breakout groups were created, were organized, and I believe RAM is the Renters Action Movement is the only one that's still operating today. So it was from a meeting of like-minded people, and we had the same goals.
And what were those goals? Like, when you looked around the city, what were the challenges that you identified early on?
Well, there's a lot of challenges in a city like Calgary for a renter, but our focus from initiation was rent control, to introduce rent control in Alberta. It's not exclusive to that, but that was our main campaign. That's how we started. All of us who joined had an interest in advocating for rent controls in Alberta.
Mm-hmm. And what is the experience of being a renter in Calgary? Let's say I moved to Calgary from Montreal or Toronto, and I want to rent and I want to find a job. What am I going to run into?
Well, probably something you hadn't experienced in another city like Montreal or Toronto. And it also depends when you move here, because we live in a boom and bust economy. And because of that, it's so unpredictable. If you moved here, say, 6-7 years ago, it would have been very, very difficult and very competitive to get a place. And if you moved here in the last year, there'd be more housing available. But it would still be hard to secure a place if you didn't have a job, say, already, or a good reference check or things like that. So there's still all those loops that you have to jump through, for sure. Little bit easier now, but it doesn't mean it's any less precarious or any more predictable. It's still very unpredictable because of our economy. Mm-hmm.
In Calgary, it seems like for a long time now, you know, home ownership is always set up as the ideal. You should own, and there's been, you know, sometimes a very open condescension towards renters. To what extent do you think that is moved or has it?
I don't think it's moved at all. One one thing that we've been doing in the last two and a half years is to been to try and increase the improve the profile of the renter. So we did a little photo campaign saying pictures of people. I'm a renter. I'm proud of it. I've been a renter my whole life and chose to be. I'm a renter and a good person. So there, because as you say, the goal for many Calgarians and Albertans is to buy a house, and the number of renters is quite low compared to a lot of other big cities. So we're in the 20s somewhere. I think the last time I checked, 24% of Calgarians were renters. So there's a stigma attached to renting, or there's this idea that it's just in the meantime. Whereas if you look at a city like Montreal, 68% of the population are renters. So they have a much more critical mass that can advocate for improvements in the rental condition.
It's interesting thinking about, like you mentioned, Montreal, 68% renters, or you think of a place like New York City, which also would have a high percentage of renters. Mm-hmm. Like in so many ways, Calgary is trying to be like other cities. And yet on this, we kind of have retained that. Well, I've heard some people call it almost a religion of home ownership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Or do you have any insight as to why that would be?
Well, I guess Calgary is a place for many years where people have come to make money. And we have been told as a generation, for generations, that housing provides security, that if you have a house, you're going to be okay in retirement. We've all been taught that this is the best investment you can make in your future. So, and because of the stigma as well. People come here, they don't want to be renters because renters are thought of as bad people. But I think it's mostly the investment thing that people, and for a long time, people were making scads of money here in Alberta working in the oil fields, and it was easy for them to buy a house. It wasn't a burden like it might be nowadays for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with the economy changing, you know, the landscape has changed significantly, and maybe that's what we're headed into is, you know, more people renting, and that's normal.
Well, and I might suggest that it's not only the dominant philosophy that it was operating, but it's also government policy. A lot of the policies and the things that you hear about and policies being made, like in Calgary, you know, the infrastructure is being paid for by the city when new developments are built further and further and further out. So they're promoting this idea of home ownership being the best way to be a good Calgarian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We all want to be good Calgarians.
It's true. It's like deeply part of the, I don't know, Calgary mythology, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think people need to know about this issue? Like, when you look at your group, like what are you guys trying to put on the agenda or kind of raise the profile of?
Well, with our rent control campaign, how we frame it is a little bit differently. We frame it that housing is a human right, and this isn't always accepted. I think in Calgary, in Alberta, housing is considered a commodity and an investment. So our frame is different, so we're looking at it differently. People who get angry, or the opposition, has always been an economic opposition to rent control. So they've always said that, you know, they're in it to make a profit. So if you don't like it, go. You can move, or you can buy your own house, you know. And we just think it's a human right, and it should be looked at as that, not as a commodity. So first of all, I think we frame it differently. So our argument with people who oppose it is just a philosophical approach to housing and what it means. I think what people need to know, though, is in Calgary that often rents respond to what's going on in the economy. So if the price of oil is way up and all sorts of people are coming to our province, then there's no housing available. And that means the people who work at 7-Eleven or the people who have minimum wage jobs or the single parents can't afford a place to live just because the price of oil went up and people are making a lot more money. Those who live below the poverty poverty line, or I'd say even at the poverty line, when the economy changes, their income doesn't change very much. So there's way less places to rent. The prices go up because it's responding to the market. And then they're priced out of the housing market. People who live on Alberta Works have to live somewhere. A single individual gets $660 a month. You're not going to find a place for that price in Calgary. We have a huge homeless issue, and a lot of it is precarious living environments. I think that's going to be our next campaign, by the way, is just identifying the gaps in the housing that's provided for the homeless. But in Alberta, there's no limits on how much a landlord can raise your rent. And I think a lot of people don't know this, that the limit is once a year, and you must be given 3 months' notice if you're in a year lease. But my rent can be $1,000 this month. I get 3 months' notice, and then my rent can be $2,000 or $3,000. It's responding to the market, not to the people. And this is bad on a number of levels. One is it doesn't add to community development. If you have a stable population living in your community, it's going to add to your community. It's going to make it a safer, friendlier environment. And the other thing is that right now in Alberta, people say, and when I argue with people on Twitter or Facebook or in person, they say, well, if you don't like it, you can move. Well, if you're making a decision between paying your rent and buying food, you certainly don't have enough money saved to pay renters and put a damage deposit on a new place across town that might save you $100 a month. So there might be a little bit more choice now, but it's still unaffordable for many people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned like people are priced out of the housing market, and the other thing that's happening is like they're being priced out of certain neighborhoods. Like we have all these buzzwords about vibrant diversity, mixed use, et cetera, all this jargon that's in vogue. But what's actually happening is that in a neighborhood, you know, well, I don't know if East Village is a good example, actually, because you do have kind of a mix here. But a lot of these inner city neighborhoods are not accessible for a large part of the population. Like, I'm curious about your thoughts on that, too.
Well, gentrification is the enemy of the renter in affordable rental housing. I personally have been had to leave two different houses for condo development. So this is under the guise of we are trying to densify the downtown, increase that. But what's happening is I'm being asked to leave my rental housing, and condos are going up that are either being sold or for sale. And I don't want to buy, and I can't afford to buy, actually. And so what we're also asking for is a review of the Residential Tenancy Act. And in that review, it would address rent controls, but it would also address the rights of renters that maybe aren't being properly addressed at this time. To sort of what we're trying to do with RAM is level the playing field, is the landlords have a huge lobby and a big organization, and us 28% of renters in Calgary that are usually working, busy people, single mothers, students, we don't have the time or the money to organize. We have no money behind us whatsoever. So everything that everyone does for RAM is volunteer.
Mm-hmm. It's grassroots.
It's grassroots. Yes, it is.
It seems like even 10 or 15 years ago in Calgary, there was a lot more anti-poverty groups, grassroots groups working on housing and stuff. And that's kind of, if you, like on housing, other than you guys, it tends to be very official. Like, yeah, you could talk to the United Way, or you could talk to Vibrant Communities Calgary, these nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to say they're not doing good work, but it seems like that grassroots element kind of faded for a time.
Yeah, well, you know, I think one of the conflicts that a lot of people have is that a lot of these initiatives are left-leaning, if I may use that term. And when our government was voted into office in Alberta almost 4 years ago now, I think a lot of people were just like, whew, now we can relax. We've got this government that's, you know, always said it's with the people and with these sort of initiatives. Initially, it used to be in their, I don't know what that's called, the NDP said that they supported rent control before they were voted into office. And it's not a politically appealing initiative for a lot of people. So that's been dropped from their profile campaign. I can't remember the word. But I think a lot of people got lazy, and they were so happy that a left-leaning government came in that they didn't want to criticize them in any way, and they didn't want to push them in any way. So what I think was happening is that even though this apparently left-leaning government was voted into office, all the pressure has been coming from the right. So it switched the Overton window way over to the right. And those of us on the left who didn't want to criticize our left-leaning government have been really silent, and so everything's got pushed to the right. Unfortunately, I think what's going to happen is that may not be the case in Alberta after the next election, and perhaps we'll see a lot more grassroots groups reviving in opposition. But these initiatives shouldn't be based on what government is in office. It should be based in, you know, a passion and a deep caring for what goes on for the people in the city that are traditionally considered vulnerable. And I'd say they're vulnerable because of policy, but they're vulnerable.
At City Hall, often, you know, when they're dealing with matters of planning, for the longest time, it's been, you know, the market, basically the market will provide. And all over the place, you're seeing how that's not working. Whether homelessness or whether, you know, rising rates of poverty in the suburbs, all this stuff. Do you think, or do you see any evidence of that faith in the market being shaken or in any meaningful way?
Well, I mean, I think this shift in thinking should have occurred a long, long time ago. The invisible hand of the market has not taken care of those vulnerable people. And the trickle-down effect has been proven not to be effective. The initiative, first of all, the Residential Tenancy Act is provincial. So the municipal government doesn't have a lot to do with it, but they certainly could control it, advocate for changes. But the initiative I've seen at City Hall that was their big push for renters was secondary suites. And although I think it's super important that places are brought up to code so people aren't living in dangerous environments, I think it's low-hanging fruit. I don't want to live in a basement, and I don't know a lot of people who want to live in a basement. So why are we spending so much energy on this? I think maybe it's people who want their in-laws or their parents to live in their basement that are fighting for this, because really, if I had a choice, a basement would be the last place I'd live. So I think they've expended, particularly our mayor has expended a lot of energy on, you know, making true to his promise. I'd like to see, you know, better accommodation built so that us vulnerable poor people or renters could live above ground. I don't really want to live underground, thank you very much. So I think that they've been distracted by this issue, and it's super low-hanging fruit as far as I'm concerned.
Well, great. Thanks, Donna.
You're welcome.
End of line. Thanks for listening, and see you again soon.
You've been listening to Sprawlcast, and this podcast was made at the New Central Library. And like I mentioned before, our time at the New Central Library is wrapping up. The pop-up newsroom is going away. We had our time, and it's been awesome. But it's time to move on to the next thing. But before we do that, I want to give a special thanks to the Calgary Public Library, and in particular, three people, Stephanie Nemchuk, Carolyn Ryder, and Christine Hayes. All three of these people have been awesome in terms of putting together the pop-up newsroom on the library side, and it's been great working alongside them and experimenting with different forms of civic engagement, seeing what works, what doesn't. So I just want to thank the library for being game to even try this experiment. Our theme music is by Dan D. Agostino, and our C-Train narrator is Holly McConnell. You can visit us online at www.sprawlcalgary.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We are at Sprawl Calgary. Thanks for listening, and see you next time. The Sprawl is crowdfunded, ad-free, and made in Calgary. If you value this podcast, please sign up as a monthly supporter of The Sprawl on Patreon. Most people do just $5 or $10 a month. You can sign up at www.patreon.com/sprawlcalgary.